Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 379, entitled NoScript Show Episode 12, How Web Typography Has Evolved. It was published on Thursday, the 4th of July, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and a few bits of housekeeping before I chat with my good friend David Wormsley. The first thing to mention is that if you would like to follow what we do on WP Builds, head over to our subscribe page, wpbuilds.com/subscribe, and see what takes your fancy. We've got information about our YouTube channel, our Twitter handle, and of course the email list that you can sign up to. If you do sign up to that email list, I will send you an email twice a week, one to say when the podcast comes out, that's on a Thursday, but also to tell you when our This Week in WordPress show has been made into a podcast. We do that show every week at wpbuilds.com/live. We would appreciate it if you came along and gave us some comments. It's always at 2 p.m. UK time, so put that into your calendar. The other thing to mention is that if you would like to advertise on the WP Builds podcast and get your product or service in front of a WordPress-specific audience, feel free to do that. Head to wpbuilds.com/advertise, a little bit like these three fabulous companies did. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. That's go.me/WPBuilds. We're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And also, we're sponsored by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. That's omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to those three fabulous companies for keeping the lights on over at WP Builds. Do make sure that if you have any interactions with those companies, you tell them that you heard about them from the WP Builds podcast. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, as I said, it's another of the NoScript Show hijacks of the WP Builds podcast. David Wormsley and I talking about web typography today. So obviously typography is an incredibly crucial element to any website, making your website readable and looking modern. Choosing the correct typography is a really important component. We talk about things like the transition away from pixels to rems. We explore the new features in web typography like font loading and background clipping, the importance of fluid typography and tools like the Utopia CSS generator. And also we get into a bit of multilingual, the importance of Chinese, Japanese, Korean characters, that kind of thing. And also a whole bunch of other things like underused HTML tags. All very exciting. And I hope that you enjoy it. Welcome to the NoScript Show about modern web design, where we look at what we can build today with minimal software and skills. Today we're talking about how web typography has evolved to meet new technological and social demands. We can't cover all the new CSS properties and units or fully explore what is possible with variable fonts, but we might be able to understand modern web typography through its changing history. So David, how comfortable are you with the topic of typography? Now there's a leading question.
Yeah, well, not very. I always feel intimidated. We were talking about this earlier. I think we both feel that when people really know their stuff, when they've got design training, they kind of know stuff and it's almost a secret language.
You know, I think that's true. Club. Yep.
I don't know the secret handshake to get in, but I'm learning stuff and it's becoming more important to me all the time. And
it never felt at the beginning when I was doing websites, it never felt like an important thing. And then I'd open up a book. So when books were the way that you learned about the internet, I'd open up a book and I'd see, you know, somebody getting into typography and my eyes would just glaze over. You know, they'd be charts pointing to the corners of letters and the kerning and all of that kind of thing. And I think I don't need to know any of this. I mean, you know, it's hard enough getting the pixels on the page. Just I'll use whatever font comes my way. But you're right. And I feel like a lot of people who have been very good, capable, thoughtful about typography, maybe they have some background in graphic design, a history of working in graphic design, or maybe they went to some art college or something like that. So there has been a feeling that it's in a domain that I don't usually circulate in.
I know. And you were showing me some of the books that were on your shelf there. You had things by Elliot J. Stock and was it Mark Bolton?
Mark Bolton, the Designing for the Web. It's an old book now, but open it up and it's full of this typography stuff. And actually, kind of interestingly, I don't think that information in that book has probably aged. If you were to look at screenshots of websites, that will be terribly out of date because that book's probably about 12, maybe older, maybe as much as 15 years old. I'm not sure. Mm. You know, the layouts and the capabilities and the screenshots of the websites, they're really out of date now. And you kind of almost smirk looking at them. But the typography information looks as fresh today as it ever did. So that's kind of curious. It's this stuff is old.
Yeah. And I think what we're talking about is how we've translated some of that historically onto the web here. We're not worried about it because we've been limited in what we could do when we started with the web. When we started, we only had those web safe fonts anyway. But I think there's also errors that we've never even thought of that you and I both being exposed to you particularly because you've interviewed a lot of people who are knowledgeable about this. So there's a lot of things like knowing a readable character length, you know, across the page, something that's comfortable to read with, you know, something generally under about 70 characters or something, underlining text, which we'll talk about, links, as we'll talk about, and just generally, also, we tended to center things, didn't we?
Yeah,
blocks of paragraphs, you know, which were hard to read. So I think there's a lot of things that you and I would have picked up because it's coming even to, you know, those communities in WordPress. We pick up from a lot of people knowledgeable in that about that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, whenever I've spoken to somebody who is deeply embedded in this kind of thing, I am profoundly interested in the level of detail that you can get to with typography. Yeah. We're obviously in this episode, we're going to scratch almost none of the surface even. We're just, you know, we're just touching the merest bit of it. But when you get into it, all of the different bits and pieces that make up a letter, there's so many words that are, you know, ligatures and kerning and all of these different things. Yeah. And I don't know what most of them are. And having a conversation, though, with these people always leaves me feeling, wow, that literally is a career just in that, just in learning typography. But I think the ship has sailed for me, David.
I think we can start to, well, we can implement a lot of stuff that's out there. I think what makes me interested in it is following on from our last chat, where we were talking about how difficult it is with images. That I know, even from the early web, when I could look at somebody who knows typography, they can lay out a beautiful site with text only. And I just think, I don't want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, shall we bring up the show note?
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Here we go. Okay, I'll just quick plug about this website, I guess. So you're looking at, if you are looking at this, not listening to it, but if you are listening to it and want to look at it, go to noscript.show, so that's the URL, noscript.show, and then / whatever episode we're talking about. So this is episode 11, so noscript.show/11 will get you to this page. And what a fantastic start you made at the top there, David. That looks like an image, surely. it's an
issue. Yeah, well, it's type. It's just using, I think, a fairly new property where we can, and I always forget type. What the name of it. I mention it later in the notes, so we'll come to it. But it's basically a clip-in to type, and then we can put an image showing through so that the type is transparent and the image underneath it is clipped in it. So, yeah. I thought I needed to do something a little bit fancy for this episode. So,
but
yeah.
That is really, really lovely, isn't it? Because just the evolution of that, in the day when we began, that was possible, but only as an image, without a doubt. And it's not, you know, I don't know how many people deploy this kind of typography, but that looks profoundly nice, you know? I mean, it may not to be everybody's palette, you know, the colors or what have you, but look at what's possible. It's copy-pastable. It is the word typography on a screen. Yeah. But you've got all these lovely flowing colours in the background, and it really sets it off. It's really alive at the very beginning. So, bravo. Lovely job.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Okay, shall we start with... Well, we're looking at changes, so we'll start with the biggest change, probably, is the responsive web and how typography's had to change. So we'll start talking, I think, about responsive typography, because we've gone from that single screen resolution that we could all work to, so it's similar to print. Then we've gone to responsive when we first got our sort of standard sizes for our most mobiles and tablets, to now when we can make no assumptions about the viewport size of, that our users have, or the pixel density as well that comes with those devices. So that's meant that we've had quite a few shifts, really. That the first one is from pixels to rems as our unit for working with type. And I think with that, I've put down that it was once hotly debated. And it was up till quite recently, I think, with a lot of people still preferring pixels, still kind of backwards looking on this. But, and we were talking about this earlier, it's been a recommendation for rems from the W3C since we've had CSS3, which is going back to 1999. So
25 years that everybody's ignored it. That's largely because they weren't able to use it, right? The browsers didn't keep up.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it still continued on because, it's not just that the technology wasn't there to allow us with rems. It's just that we're so used. I mean, people have to convert often from a pixel perfect design onto the web, and they're used to working with pixels rather than, you know, having something which is just non-static at all with rems. But I think the argument's over, and I don't think you'll find any experts that will argue for pixels now because of the accessibility, because of the fact that it is... a user's unable then to change their browser settings if they want something large and have that honored and have everything, you know, proportionally changed. So I think rems is definitely it, because it's more manageable, it's more scalable. You can change your mind about the overall size quite easily by changing the root percentage.
But I guess a reason for this not becoming the default also is because it's so much less intuitive to understand. It's kind of, you know, there's some weird number that you put in there, which isn't necessarily an integer. And because of that, it's hard to gauge what that means. And based upon what you've got as the root font size, then, you know, it might look different. Whereas with a pixel, you put in 30 and, you know, assuming you're using the same font throughout the website, you know what that's going to look like. And 15 will be smaller by this exact amount, and 50 will be bigger by this exact amount. But it doesn't allow for the capacity to change it. Well, I guess a trick in the page builders that we've used is to use media queries and then change the font size within the mobile view and all of this kind of thing. But better to just set it up once and get it right with, well, leading on to the next point, I guess, media queries and fluid typography.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, rems on their own, I suppose they weren't as convincing as pixels, and why the debate went on until we really got viewport units and calc allowing us to move from media queries where we're saying, okay, it's going to be this pixels at this viewport width, and then it's going to be... Now we've moved to fluid typography where we can use calc and let the browser calculate it for us. So I guess why we've everybody's accepted REMS now is because of the fact we could use fluid typography. And we've got these generators that takes all of the chore out of the mass. And my recommended one is the Utopia one. And there's a presentation, I've linked to it on the show notes there, which is worth watching, by Tris Mudford, who talks about not only their tools and what they're doing with it, but just generally fluid design. And it's made it so much easier because now, I mean, if I want to do anything now, I just go over to their tool and I say, and it starts with pixels. You put in what you write at the smallest size.
Get your base layer going, yeah.
Yeah, you say, what do you imagine the pixels to be there? What do you imagine at its largest size that you're accommodating? Put the pixel value expected. And it does the calculation between those two points. And it also allows you to change the typography scale, which is another thing, again, which makes typography so much better. It's like musical notes. There are set types of scales that you do, so the spacing. And it will do all that for you. So as it's condensing down to a mobile, the type of scale that you might have at a large size, there needs to be less space between, you know, the lettering and stuff. So, you know, the text is no.
I confess I've not used that tool, but it sounds like a really valuable thing. So just in case you're listening to this on the audio, Google Utopia CSS generator. And if you are able to get to our show notes, there's a link directly there. So I should probably check that out. I confess I didn't.
No, there's a I've done a small video where I've mentioned it as well and using it. And it's my favorite one. There's a lot of ones out there, but why I like it is because they use it all the time. There's a few good designers. Andy Bell is one of them who uses it all the time. And they're using it in Clear Left, which is Jeremy Keefe's agency as well. So they're supporting it. So they're really keeping up to date on things that are changing with typography as well. So that's why I kind of like theirs above all others.
But okay.
Yeah. And it's got other things that go with it, spacing as well, which I used. So I think, I never connected the dots until we started talking about the whole REM thing. But I think it's, you know, everybody's jumped to REMs when you can see you can use the fluid typography. So that seems to be the way.
We should probably say at this point what fluid typography is. And if you've never encountered it and you are using, I don't know, media queries to change bluntly, you've got a font size in pixels for desktop, a font size in pixels for tablet, and a font size in pixels for anything less than tablet, call it mobile, then this is different. This is where this is the allowance with fluid typography that the width, it's a complete linear scale. If you enlarge the viewport, given the constraints or what CSS you used, the typography will just grow proportionately and then reach some sort of maximum. So if you're on, like a giant 8K monitor, it's not going to be truly enormous. It'll max out at some point that you set, but it's beautiful watching it when you actually just grab the handles of your browser and reduce, enlarge, and you see the font size growing and shrinking. And actually, if you think about that, that's what we should always have had. I mean, I wish we had had that, but we didn't. You know, technology didn't allow for it. But that's exactly what you want, right? I'm on this size device, and it's halfway between this and this, so the font is there, and it's perfectly aligned for the viewport that I've got. Yeah, it's a shame that it's now a new thing rather than this has been around forever and ever and ever since the dawn of the internet.
And it's a kind of compromise with it, because I think when it first came out with the fluid typography, it was just saying, oh, we can use viewport width now to do anything.
Right.
And then you realize that you have to anchor that a little bit with a REM in there to make sure that, because if you do that, then users can't zoom out on their browser. So there's a strange anchor. And the maths of it become very difficult. So you're not absolutely fully assured, unless you move your browser to see how it's responded. But it does get over that big hiccup in the fact that once where we had used the responsive to set them to our known mobiles and tablet sizes, well, we found that many are just before the breakpoint that you might be reaching. And then suddenly their text is out of proportion to the size of their device.
Yeah.
And you get this horrible jump in. So it gets rid of that. And it is lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think another thing that's changed, at least for me, this might be my ignorance, but there's a sort of move away, I think, from our browsers would generally sort out the spacing on an element by element basis, or we would style elements. You know, we would put the margins of the paddings that we wanted on our individual elements. Now I think there's more of an interest in looking at flow, because we want to control uniformly the space that we've got between our paragraphs and stuff. So there are a couple of, a couple of things that I would recommend for this one is the stack, which is on every layout, which is, Andy Bell, who I've mentioned, and probably a key person behind this is Hayden Pickering, because 10 years ago now, he came up with something called, it was the lobotomized owl, this little selector. So you always had this problem. So if you put padding on the bottom of your paragraph, then the last paragraph would always have that padding that you didn't want. So he's kind of used this little technique to be able to effectively set it on the top of your paragraph, but by using these lobotomized owls, it's a child, so it doesn't select the first one. So there's something that you can uniform the spaces. And there's also a wonderful demo as well, definitely recommended. I want to watch it again by Mike May, who's a really, really good person on typography, and he's got lots of tools as well that you can use. But he's on a show by Ben Myers called Semantic.dev.
Oh, that's clever.
Semantic. Clever name. Yeah. And you've got to watch that if you're really into typography. I've got to watch it again because it went over my head. But he really discusses that whole idea of flow, and he sets it more manually. But I think that's a kind of fairly new thing.
Again, links in the show notes, both of those things, the stack and the typography demo by Mike May, is in the show notes. And then we got these new units, which honestly, I don't know anywhere near enough about. So I'm hoping that you're actually going to school me here. This will be interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty poor on them. One that I do use, so we've got CH, which is for character. So we can set our width of things by the character length, which is really, really useful for that problem that I mentioned earlier about the fact that we tend to put too many words, you know, on a full view, so it's not very readable. You can set with your character length, and that's what I'm doing actually on the site that you're looking at. So what's setting the length of the inner container here is the characters. I think it's set at 70. So effectively, the text within that can't expand beyond that. So a lot of people are using that in part of the responsive design. But, you know, if you set that maximum on all of your paragraphs, then wherever you're going to place them in your design, you know, it's going to be fairly readable. You said,
interesting. Okay. That's
yeah. And something I don't think I've ever used yet, which is EX.
I've never used this.
No. Well, it's a little bit like M's are based on the, you know, the font M size. And we get rems from that because we get root elements. Well, X is the same. It's something in typography, which again, I don't understand, which is set in the height of the X, basically, is something that you're measuring. So when you get clever people like Mike May, who knows how to use these, they will actually use that value for setting the heights. They will use that for knowing what is the correct line height to put according to the font that you're using.
But yeah, this rings a bell. It has got some characteristic of the letter X, hasn't it? And I can't remember why that letter in particular. Maybe it's just got a certain height or width ratio. Can't actually remember, but yeah, okay, that's fascinating. So not the letter X, but EX in this case.
EX in this case. I've never used it yet, but it's really for, I mean, if you do understand that, you might be setting certain things against the X value of the font, if you really understand the font you're using. So you're styling to that.
Yeah.
It goes a bit above me. And then of course we've already talked about them. We've got the sort of a viewport width and viewport height we could start using, and viewport minimum, a viewport max. And someone like Mike May, again, I really don't use VMAX yet, but he might use it to section the sort of space he will put on sections of his site. So his header, his footer, his main. The leftover space at the bottom, he'll be setting this to percentage. So depending on the browser itself, it will allow a little bit more space or less as needed. So again, it's one way of doing it. But again, I use other things in Utopia for spacing to set spacing so it changes according to the size of the viewport. So there's lots of different ways to skin this particular cat, I think.
Yeah, and no doubt a Google around each of these will give you more information. But yeah, some of those a mystery to me. Some of them I've definitely used. Okay, shall we move on?
Yeah, accessibility. So, you know, again, that's a big awareness boost that we've had recently over accessibility, maybe because it's becoming law for us. So if we do it professionally, I guess we should be aware of these things. So there's a lot of changes there. I mean, we've talked about this before. We've really gone from this Western bias on the web to now having writing modes and internationalization. Yeah. So we, I think we talked, Rachel Andrews talked about that when we were talking, I think it was in episode 3, when we talked about how we kind of need to know this concept to know our CSS layout. But there are lots of other things coming along with that. I noticed I was just listening to the latest release on Chrome, where they have started to put in place something so you can deal with Chinese, Japanese, and Korean characters and stuff and kind of space those out. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we were saying before the call began, weren't we? Before we hit record, at least, that, you know, I don't really even think about the web as a Chinese character thing.
Yes.
You know, if I ever see something like that, I've clearly strayed into an area of the web that I can't access because I can't read Chinese. But just think of the population and the fact that all of these browsers in the past, at least anyway, were really configured for left to right, you know, top to bottom, and the character set being a Latin alphabet. And of course, most of the world don't use any of that. But we're sort of educated to think about that. And even, you know, the things that we've been talking about, the EX is based upon the Latin character X and so on. And I don't even know where to begin with typography with, a Chinese character set. I no idea what the concerns are there. I do know that there's a history of, you know, calligraphy and making those characters look beautiful. I would say even more so than we have in the West with our typography, that there seems to be a real heritage in, you know, when they paint the Chinese characters, making them look beautiful and adding weight to certain strokes so that they enlarge in one part and diminish in another, and then, you know, sort of tail off into sort of, or, you know, almost nothingness. And fascinating. I'd love to get into that.
It's interesting because I think the new things that you brought out for them is a word break and auto phrase for them, and also trimming, because how their text is getting aligned in the sort of spacing isn't always perfect on the web. And kind of this is all still new stuff. It's incredible that you should have such a large population of people who have not been accommodated so far on the web. But that's definitely a change, and it knocks on to us, because even if we never deal with those, we've had to understand things like flexbox and grid layouts in terms of writing modes. We've needed to have that concept to be able to align things properly. So yeah, that's a massive change. Shall I move to the next thing?
Sure.
That is our shift away from what we had when we started, which was only web safe fonts or system fonts, to this abundance of open source options, Google Fonts particularly. And then back to, I think, and it's not that this keeps going backwards and forwards, I'm sure, to a few quality fonts that you use that have all the character sets that are kind of flexible. Or a trend a bit back to considering system fonts again. So I did a little video on that one before, which was looking at modernfontstack.com, which allows you to see what fonts are available on different systems, and you get a little screenshot of it as well, so you can see how they might pan out if you do want to use them. But there's a real argument, I think, from a accessibility point of view, is the fact that probably what helps people with dyslexia above anything else or other things is familiarity. So if it's your system font that you're using for your body tech, you know, if that's an Apple, what we should be seeing there, I think, should be San Francisco on your screen. You know, this is a variable font. It's a font that we couldn't license. And for many people, that's just going to be familiar. So it's a good font to use, perhaps, rather than bringing in a custom one where we don't need to, where it doesn't add any extra value.
Yeah, I think we all got a bit carried away when Google Fonts came around, didn't we? Dumping every kind of imaginable font that we could because it looked quirky and interesting. And I think you're right. I think there's definitely a move away from that. In the WordPress space and CMS space and, you know, web space, localizing those fonts, I guess, is a recent endeavor. But, you know, GDPR and all that kind of thing. But I think you're right. Mm. I think going back to system fonts and something which is familiar for functional text like we're seeing on the screen now, where we're just trying to get information from us to you, where the flair and the novelty of it is really not the point, then yeah. But obviously if I was to go to, I don't know, the latest band's website, the latest pop star's website, where that sort of creativity is trying to be emphasized, maybe the bit about how much tickets cost and where the venue is, maybe that would be a web safe font. But the bit about, you know, what the artist does and who they are, especially the headings, you still feel you've got to go a bit nuts with that because that's part of the whole typography thing, is allowing you to be creative. But I'm like you, but maybe it's because I'm old and my eyes are sort of starting to fail a bit more. You know, I've got glasses on and things. I would just want clarity. I just want everything to be, you know, the contrast between the background and the font to be clear. I need it to be readable. I need it to be spaced out. And I honestly don't care too much for the snazzy fonts.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously with the other pressures, you know, the kind of green pressures and speed pressures as well, that, you know, if there's not a good reason to argue for a custom font, we don't necessarily stick it in. But that's not been my thinking. For the last 10 years, it's been like, woo, which of all these fonts am I
going to have? Right, right, exactly. Which pro bar in? But I can't remember the last time this happened to me, but when you stumble across a website where they've just got text, so imagery is out the window, it's just, you know, plain background, beautiful typography, you know, something clear, readable. They've obviously thought about the layout a lot. It really does, it compels you. It just sucks you in, you know.
Yeah.
It's really profound what fonts can do. In fact, we said this before we began the show. A website where clearly somebody's put a lot of effort into fonts and making their typography look amazing, it really knocks it out of the park. It takes something ordinary and makes it into extraordinary. But I don't sort of end up looking at the font particularly. I just get this profound sense, oh, that's clever. That's really beautiful. I'm now going to go and explore what font that is and what the widths that they're using and all of these kind of things. But sorry, digression.
Yeah, no, that's fine. The next point, in some ways, I think I've made it already, but perhaps a trend in that from moving to browser setting the line heights and stuff, or as individually doing it, to and proximity according to fonts used. So, in some ways, we have some guidance about line height is usually the biggest problem for people not being able to read when you've got your paragraphs and you've not got the right amount. And you can go to something like WCAG. Actually, there's another little thing on there. If you hover over the WCAG, you'll see.
Oh, it's underlined.
I'm using the abbreviation here, another bit of typography. The Web Content Accessibility Guidelines.
Oh, so sadly, our video platform doesn't pick that up. That's interesting. I am hovering over something, and on my screen, I can see it. And there's a little, you know, like a tooltip, if you like, that the browser has provided, which pops up to give me the context of that. But on the video, it's not come through. There must be some reason for that. But anyway, there we go.
And I think, you know, there's more awareness of lots of things about giving line heights, and the experts will know how to do that against the fonts. The WCAG will give us guidelines like it should be roughly about 1.5. It's a unitless height, so it takes the value of the unit for the font that you said. And there were other things that I wasn't aware of until recently I'm probably failing on this site. The idea of proximity, the idea that we need to leave a little bit more on a header, when there's some paragraph text underneath it, on the header itself, the space above it needs to be more than the space before you get to the paragraph. So the proximity of the header to the paragraph underneath is grouped together, and that makes for better reading. So
yeah, it's interesting. I've always kind of found that to be strange. When you look at that, when you see it on somebody else's website, it looks correct. But when you're in the weeds and you're looking at, let's say, I don't know, the padding above a heading, I kind of always want to get rid of it. I want it to go away. But then when I look at it on the front end, that looks right. Because you do need to give that little bit of breathing space, don't you? That bit's finished. We're now onto a new heading. There needs to be a proportionate gap to show, okay, this is an H4. There's something going on there. This is an H3, something, and this is an H2, something else. But I always have this intuition I want to erase it, but I generally don't.
Yeah, it's just that. I mean, it's just so you can see what content belongs with what, which header belongs with the content below. Just proximity is one of those things which I'm becoming more aware of all the time, you know, as you listen to more people who know UX design and have that formal training.
I'm just looking for it on this page, and you don't really have too much use of that, do you? You've got these great big, I'm guessing these are H2s or something like that, but...
It should be, if I've done it right, I probably haven't. It should have a little bit more space above.
Oh, it definitely does. It looks like it. There's a little, you probably can't see on the screen, there's a little grey box here, and the distance between the V and the box. Oh, no, it definitely is. There's definitely a little bit more.
All
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Bravo. I'm good to do it. The next point under accessibility was just a move that we've seen, I think, recently about. Earlier, we tended to see underlining as visual clutter, something that you, on your links I'm talking about here, to now respecting it as an essential UI. And I think we've been given some new tools that go along with that. One that I most like, and I'm using it all the time. If you see where the links are there, there's a bit of a space between it. And that's because of the new property, which is the text underlining offset. Where you can actually offset that line so none of the descenders are touching on it. And also you can set the thickness of that line as well. You can make it a little bit thinner and obviously you can color it. So we've got a lot more control over our links now.
I really like what you've done here. So obviously the descender, the G here in whatever font this is not particularly, it's not particularly long. The G doesn't descend that far, but still the little gap that you've got here, which is bigger than I would expect normally, is nice. It really does make that kind of feel like it's, I don't know, it's not breaking up the flow when my eye's going from left to right and reading through it. That line is kind of out the way.
Yeah.
So I'm able to read it as normal text and keep going. And I do like the fact that the line isn't broken up. And sorry, one last thing. And I do think that this has to become the default, doesn't it? I think we all just need to settle on underlining is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Let's all go back to underlining, please.
Yeah, it's become I think, you know, setting also this offset is quite nice. And I think some people have put it in their CSS resets. If there's no other style against it or class against it, that will be there. Stephanie Eccles does that. And I think that's it's only recent this that we were able to do it. So I can see why people wanted to remove stuff, even though you do break up the line by default on browsers. If there is a descender, it can be a little bit uncomfortable to read. But yes, I think the argument now is that we should, and to be honest, we're just going back to arguments that were there from the 90s. So Jacob Nielsen was always saying, you must underline your links, you must underline your links. And somehow designers got into the idea that it was just a bit clutter and we'll remove it, it's fine. And it really isn't fine. And the way to know that is just imagine that you can't see color, and then you'll know it's not fine. And
yeah, that's a nice way. Yeah.
Or imagine that your device is a black and white device, a monochrome device. And suddenly you've removed what the web basically is.
That's really a good point. Yeah. That's a perfect encapsulation of why it needs to be that way. If you cannot see color, just imagine it in black and white. And here it's pretty clear. Also, I guess the line height, you know, the gap between this row of text and this row of text is enough to allow that to sort of breathe, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So this is a better example because you can see more of it. The underline here, you've got the offset, which is quite generous, but still not too much. But it's still not interfering with the row below the line below it. This is still not being interfered with by this, and you can actually see that in the way it's being highlighted. So that's nicely done, David, basically.
Okay. Well, Well, we're using system fonts here, so I'm not actually sure whether, you know, the line height is right on yours as it is on the one that I see on the Windows.
Interesting.
So it's a bit of a guesswork on that, I think. Anyway, yeah, so I think that's definitely a move. And it was, you know, it's down to the fact that we had frameworks like Bootstrap, which were hugely popular, that didn't underline their link by default. It's changed now.
But anyway.
Okay, should we move on to the next bit of technology?
Yeah, we'd better race, actually. We're not sure exactly how long, but we've added up quite a few minutes. So let's put the pedal to the metal. Is that what they say? Something like that.
There's a lot to cover here.
Yeah,
okay. Variable fonts, we can cover them fairly quickly. Well, there's a big change in the fact that we used to have to support multiple font formats because of the whole history with them. So we had the TTF, the OFT, I can't remember what they stand for now, but
no.
There were a whole history. I think, you know, the TrueType form is the first one that was Microsoft and Apple getting together back in the 80s. And then you get variations that have come on those to make them fit better with the web. Things like, I think the OFT added ligatures and things like that. And then we got the embedded OT, which was the one to work very well with IE. And then finally, the World Wide Web Consortium got together and had a body for fonts. And then that's when we got WUF.
honestly, if you get me to transcribe this with AI software, the last paragraph you just said will be...
So we get the web open font format, which is what we've got. And from 2010, so this is really the recommendation from the W3C from 2010. And then they further optimize it, so we get WUF 2. Now support is there for WUF 2. So we've basically gone from having to support all this history of formats to really being able to pretty much, unless we need to support IE to get away with WUF 2, which is wonderful.
Yay, WUF 2, yeah.
And the great thing about this, which leads us really to the variable fonts, is the fact that, you know, that's the format for variable fonts. And I think that's the big trend now, is the fact that instead of having to load individually the weights or the italic versions of the font that we're using, is that we can have this all within the one WUF 2 format and use CSS to finally control the weights. So if we want some bizarre weight, say we want it, instead of it going from 300 to 400 and we want 325 or something, as the exact weight, we can do it with the variable fonts. And if we want our italics to slightly slant in a different way, we can do it with the CSS. So I think that's really exciting at the moment that we can do that. Downside, of course, is that you know, if you're only using a couple of weights or something and you're not using all this extra, then they are a bit heavier than loading those individually. So, and finally, yeah, we put down, which I think we'll just skip because I think we'll need to come back to it because I don't understand it, color or chromatic fonts.
No, I have no understanding of this. Anyway, it's a thing.
It's a thing, yeah. And actually it brings in a new format. I think it's taking one of the old formats with SVGs, and I think there's not clarity over what that is. There are some Google fonts out there, which are chromatic fonts that you can play around with. I don't quite get the value yet.
I'm kind of trying to understand what the purpose is. We can set the color of a font fairly straightforwardly in CSS. I'm kind of interested to see what the benefit is. What are we getting out of it? Is it that fonts can be, I don't know, can there be gradients in font colors or...
Yes, I think exactly that. And I think, you know, you can do a lot of the tilting and rotating and stuff of your fonts, which can create some lovely effects. But in the ones that I've seen around, the only thing where I could see I'd use it, and effectively it's no dissimilar from what I'm doing on the top header of this post where I've got an image coming through. So where I've seen a color font being used, say it's saying the word pizza and the background, the image is a pizza, and you think, well, I'm not going to load this quite heavy color font to do that when I can do it with a kind of simple clip masking like this for myself. So
yeah.
The value is not there yet for me. Okay. We'll have to see. Perhaps I don't understand it.
All right, yeah. That's variable fonts. Now we're on to some lesser use specs.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple of things on typography because they were kind of relatively new to me. So I've put an example up on there. So something which is really, when we're talking about responsive again, it's not used, and that's CSS columns.
This is so cool. This is so great.
Yeah, it's just simply that you can set columns for any of the things that you want, and you can make it responsive. It's not by default. So if we had a column count of 2, it wouldn't be responsive. We would need a media query. But what I've done on here, because there is a limited space anyway, I've put it, so it's just magic numbers with this, but I've put it at 18 rens here. So it's created 2 columns while there's more than the 18 rens to it. But if you zoom in on this one, it will just automatically
see what we get. Oh,
collapse.
We make that in the center. Zoom in. Let's put that right in the middle there. So I'm going to collapse the screen. We've still got 2 columns. There we go. Yeah, some magic moment there. It collapses down into the 1 column. Super useful. That's great.
Yeah, so sometimes we just, bringing in grid and all of that stuff where we could simply do it with CSS columns. It's been there for some time. I think the spec's been tightened up. I think Rachel Andrew has been working on this as well, who worked on grid quite a lot. So anyway, it's just a really cool trick which gets ignored. And I think there are lots of other little things which I'm just becoming aware of. So I've put a drop shadow in there. It's another little bit of on the chi on my paragraph there. It's, if you see that I've styled it slightly different, used a different font, and it's going over 1.5 of the text a little bit more because I've put a little border around it on there. And this is something, though it's not very well supported at the moment, so it's a combination of using first letter as a pseudo element or class, I think, and then initial letter as a drop cap to do that. So these kind of things. Yeah. And then there's a whole thing. I won't go into too much here, else we'll go on forever. But I think there's a whole lot of HTML which we underuse. So I've just given one example here where I'm using the keyboard one. Rather than having to pull in an image, I can style the KBD tag and create these kind of little control shift enter keys or any key that I want just with CSS.
They're nice, aren't they? They look really nice.
Yeah, I think all the pros, the people who've been in this game longer than me will put these in their explanations. But I think it's definitely worth looking at lots of HTML because we just don't use many of the tags like mark. We don't often put a different styling for time. All of these are tags which we often forget about, particularly if we've come from a background of a CMS. We kind of just put those in. So, and I'm using one actually on the top of the title there. So I'm actually using one which I'd entirely forgotten about until I started writing this, which is let me just find it on the notes so I get it right. There is one called somewhere. There it is. It's WBR, which is...
There it is.
It's basically, it's giving a width break opportunity, I think. And if you go to the top of the site here, as I've got a huge typography here, I'm actually using that to separate typo and graphy. So if you slim in on that one when it hasn't got the room.
Oh, this is good. We didn't try this before the show started.
No,
so I'm making it smaller. We got the word typography.
It will eventually.
Yay, look at that. That's so great.
So you could choose where, if you really do want to keep your massive font or something, you might want to decide where it breaks. And that's an opportunity to do it. Unlike a regular break, which will just break it for everybody. This breaks when there's the opportunity to break.
You can set it wherever you like, multiple things in one word or, yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So it's just sometimes you want your word to break in a different way. Yeah. If you're going to keep it big, probably I should have just made it small, but okay. I think that's probably enough because I'm covering, the stuff. Let's talk about the new spec, shall we?
Okay, here we go.
A couple of things here that's one that's only in Safari only, which I think is really handy, which is hanging punctuation, which will allow, and I've heard this being talked about a lot, people get annoyed that if you've got a block quote and you've styled up your quotes on, but you're going to put the quotes up there anyway, those quotes are going to indent your text.
Yeah,
and it's a lot easier if people keep running down vertically and see everything aligned. So what hanging punctuation can do is to make sure that you get to choose that it goes outside. So you'd have to use a lot of CSS to try and force your...
Right, yeah.
There would be a lot of negative margins and all that nonsense. So that's quite cool when it's supported, but it's Safari only at the moment. We've got font size adjust, which we talked about a year ago. We're doing stuff... performance. It's just, its most useful thing is the fact that you can adjust some of these fonts, usually a fallback font, which might be a system font or something. So you can kind of change its X shape. You can stretch it out a little bit. So it can better match the custom font that is waiting to load. So it stops this sort of jarring when it's going from the system fallback font to the custom font loading in. So you can line them up a little bit better with that. It's limited availability at the moment. And there's font kerning. That's fully supported at the moment, which allows us to... browsers will... kerning is spacing, basically, between letters.
Yeah.
Browsers will do that for themselves. If you want to force it, you can force it so that it's set by the font, or you can let the browser do it, or you can just turn it off altogether if you're controlling that. So that's a fully supported thing, but fairly new. And finally, the thing that was making the... my title with the image coming through it is the background clip, which is quite new but widely available now. So, and yeah, it's just used for kind of clipping backgrounds on there, and it's useful with text. Okay,
so they're all in the show notes.
They're all in the show notes.
NoScript.show/11. And then you've got a little flourish at the end here, haven't you? You've got something nice to...
Yes, if you scroll up,
hold on, wait for it. You have to see this or go to the web page. Okay, I'm going to scroll up slowly. That little word typography, which is orientated at 90 degrees, is fading in and out. I'm noticing that. What am I waiting for? Oh,
look at that.
Boing.
Oh, there.
Wow, you've even got a little bounce going on there.
Yeah, I borrowed it from somebody else. I must credit them, and I've forgotten who it is. It's somebody I do follow, and I've forgotten, but I've amended it slightly just for hours. But yes, really, this is just to highlight just the last bit of change, if you like, in our history. And I think this is really significant, only in Chrome at the moment, but we've got scroll animation, which means that we can do a lot of cool animations and stuff with our text, as I'm just showing off here.
Isn't that brilliant? And again, obviously, the purview of JavaScript forever. You know, this was the only way to do it, and now all of this stuff is coming to CSS. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit flashy, isn't it? There's quite a lot going on there to make you, make your eyes water. But you get the point. It doesn't have to be quite so dramatic as that. But something subtle, something just fading in or moving slightly to the left or the right, could be very profound. That's lovely.
And I think it's really nice that it's coming to a language that we can understand rather than JavaScript. And you really rely on languages, and it makes it a lot easier. So if your browser had been set to prefers reduced motion in some form or another, then you won't get that bouncing. You'll get the fade in slightly, you won't get the bouncing, because it can just wrap that in the CSS to be able to do that. So, you know, I think that's great. And I've also put the tilted text here just to show that we can have some fun with writing modes these days, and particularly if that's combined with the better positioning that we've got. So it's maybe not lined up perfectly because they had to do it quickly, but it's using grid to put it side by side. So grid and subgrid, given us the ability to kind of place more accurately our text, and we can, as we're showing here with the writing mode, changing that, we can turn it on its side.
It's nice. It's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. And I just think that's the way things are going. I think typography is becoming a big thing. People are using blending, filtering, masking, overlapping with other elements, and all these kind of things to tell stories these days on their web, and need less images. I think you can do a lot with good typography, and it can all be fully accessible. You can turn off the styling and anyone can read the text document. Screen readers can read it. So I think typography has just come such a long way.
I think this episode has been profoundly interesting. Can I urge you, if you have listened to this or even watched it on the screen, go to NoScript Show. I keep saying, I'm sure I've said episode 11 throughout this whole thing. And of course, it's actually it's episode 12, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sorry about that. So anytime I've said episode 11, ignore that. It's actually episode 12. And go check it out, NoScript.show/12. I'll correct that in the transcript, hopefully, and go and see what marvelous things David has put together. It's all there. Loads of links, loads of opportunity for you to learn and figure out all this stuff.
Wow. Learn with me. Yeah. It's we've bitten off more than we can chew really with this episode. It's gone on quite a long time. So we'll probably have to close up.
It's been a long one. So shall we, Shall we knock it on the head there?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back soon. Who knows when? We don't have a set schedule, but we'll be back at some point in the near future with episode 12. No, 13. Saving himself. So I'll see you next time. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Okay, that's all I've got for you this week. Hopefully you enjoyed that episode. If you did, head over to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 379, and leave us a comment there. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. That's go.me/WPBuilds. We're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And also, we're sponsored by OmniSend. OmniSend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet OmniSend. Yes, that's OmniSend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try OmniSend today at omnisend.com. That's omnisend.com. Okay, that truly is it. That's the end of the episode. I'm going to fade in some cheesy AI-generated music and say, stay safe. Have a good week. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye for now.